like what you hear?
It's simple. It's natural.
Like 98.5 The Sports Hub on Facebook. And continue the conversation on your favorite sports stories.
We're all compelled to do it.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
This looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
High fly ball, right center field, driven deep. Jones is back, turning around. Oh, he's done it again. J.D. Martinez to one of the deepest parts of Fenway. And he is now tied for the major league lead in home runs. His second of the afternoon.
420, right center, the triangle. Look at this pitch. Center cut, lift, takeoff, 420. Easy, huh? I mean, my goodness.
So I know, it's like 48 hours now. What's that expression? If it lasts for more than 4 hours, seek medical help. For me, it's been about 48, Murray, since J.D. Martinez hit that home run into the center field bleachers at Fenway Park. And see, this is where I sort of have to throw up my hands and admit, you have a uniquely skilled guy in the middle of that lineup now in J.D. Martinez. Boy, do you ever. You don't see many guys that went over that 420-foot mark. And I know that's where I started last night, but I want to start there again tonight for this reason. There was a thought I had during the show last night, looking up the Giancarlo Stanton versus J.D. Martinez debate. Okay, that debate. When I looked it up and I saw that Giancarlo Stanton this season was batting .206 against right-handed pitching, I almost fell off of my chair. .206. I didn't think the number was that bad. Now, look, it's up to .208 because he got a hit last night. But the reality is, a great player doesn't have that kind of vulnerability. And look, in the case of Giancarlo Stanton, I don't think it's going to stay that way. I think Stanton's too good a player. Last year, he hit .270 against right-handed pitching. Okay, so there is clearly a drop from last year to this year in terms of what Stanton is and how he's performing in certain situations. But if I'm teams pitching to Giancarlo Stanton going forward and I'm right-handed or I have a right-hander on the mound, sliders away. Sliders away because he'll chase. And when I say away, off the plate, because he will chase. Which brings me to J.D. Martinez. But before that, 617-779-0985. We'll take your calls right out of the chute tonight. I want to get to other things later in the program. 617-779-0985. And we'll take your calls on anything and everything pertaining to the Red Sox, but maybe specifically as they pertain to J.D. Martinez. So, do you know when you have a uniquely skilled player, and I'm asking you, the Red Sox fan, as well as Murray, but this is when you know, when you can change the situation, the pitcher on the mound, the ballpark, the time of day, the time of year, you can change all of those variables, and the end result is still pretty much the same. Okay, so when I say that, here's what I mean. This season, J.D. Martinez against right-handed pitching, .336. Against lefties, .368. At home, .365. Away, .322. April, .337. May, .351. I'm going to give you some more. Give me 1 second here, okay? I'm scrolling down in my little cheat sheet. Runners in scoring position, .348. Bases empty, .366. Men on base anywhere, .317. It goes on and on. Runners in scoring position, two outs, .500. Tie game, .359. Score within three runs, either direction, .343. Red Sox ahead, .321. Behind, .362. With this guy, it doesn't matter. Starting pitchers, he's hitting .356 against. Relievers, .324. Power pitchers, .317. Finesse pitchers, .348. You pick the number. This guy hits. It really is phenomenal. So let me take your calls, and then I got a couple of other topics I want to go to a little bit later in the show. But Martinez has been the game changer that everyone thought he could be for the Red Sox. Whether he is in the long term versus Stanton, I'm not going to make a determination on that one. It's way too early to call it. I'm not giving you a victory in that one. But in the short term, this guy's made a difference. John's in Andover. Go, John.
Yeah, Mass, how you doing, man?
Good.
So listen, I think what you just said speaks to my point. It was going to be the guy's a model of consistency. And statistics are great, but the fact that he's doing it in this market, coming from the Diamondbacks especially, I mean, you just don't see that, right? And so I don't know if you have a thought there, but the fact that he's competing this well in this market, I mean, I think it's a really good sign for us.
Well, so look, John, there's a level of intensity here. I think that makes it a unique place to play, but it's not the only intense market. And honestly, it's not like it was 15 years ago. Let's be honest. If a guy came to Boston 15 years ago and they hadn't won in 86 years, that was a big burden to carry. Not a lot of guys were willing to do that. So for all that people want to say about Curt Schilling, Curt Schilling was willing to do it. It's one of the reasons for me he will always get respect as a competitor. He was willing to put his money where his mouth was. He was willing to come here and be the guy that could win a championship in Boston. Okay, now guys still have difficulty coming here, but it's nothing like what it used to be. Don't delude yourself into thinking that. Okay, but his skill, Martinez, is, to me, it comes back to the ability first. If you have that kind of ability and that type of aptitude, you're going to hit anywhere at any time, and that's what that guy does. Matt's in Rhode Island. Go, Matt.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. What do you got?
So I don't know if you saw today, Phil Hughes got DFA'd by the Twins. I think he still has, like, a lot of money, $22 million left on the deal. But do you think the Red Sox would take a look at that?
So, Matt, I say no. I want nothing to do with Phil Hughes. I mean, frankly, I think Phil Hughes sucks. And look, you want to take a gamble. First of all, I'm not taking the money. I'd let him clear, and then you want to bring him in on a minor league deal and see if you can pitch him in the bullpen or something? Fine. Take a flyer. But in terms of giving anything up for anything of consequence for a guy like that, no, absolutely not. Quickly, Mike in a car. Go, Mike.
Yeah, the Martinez performance on Sunday I thought was great. I think what it meant more than anything else was the team really, they all seemed to get it in the bottom of the fifth inning. It was a huge opportunity. Eduardo had a great start going, but they had to break it open a little bit. They had to get some runs for him to keep him in that game. And all of them stepped up, but Martinez's home run was just so impressive to watch. And it becomes that situation of maybe they have a guy in the lineup again that opposing players are going to fear. Maybe you've got a guy that might be on that level where Ortiz was, where you got to start thinking about pitching around him. And if the rest of these guys keep hitting, he becomes that centerpiece in that lineup where you got fear in the middle, which is huge for them right now.
Okay, so look, I think that he's been that so far. Again, whether it'll stay that way, impossible to predict. But we played the sound for you yesterday, Frank Thomas. Frank Thomas said over the weekend that he thinks J.D. Martinez is the best hitter in baseball since the start of 2017. And if you do the numbers, he is. It's him or Trout. It's really that simple. It's those two guys. So that's the type of performance you've been getting out of him. And that guy's a game changer. And I also think that in tandem with Mookie Betts, he's really formed a duo that could be impossible for other teams to navigate. And honestly, I'm going to get to that later in the week because there are some particulars there that honestly involve a written element that would be easier to explain it. There's some visuals there. So we'll get to that, but they really are. They're great compliments to one another, Martinez and Mookie Betts. We'll continue to take your calls, 617-779-0985. When we come back, I want to touch on a name that popped up in the trade market that intrigued me today. And I say popped up in the trade market. I did some scouring on the internet, and there was a name I saw on a list of potential trade people that, to me, caught my attention. That's one. And then two, the shifts in Major League Baseball. Do you like them? Do you not like them? And how effective do you think they are? Some of the data may surprise you. We'll do that next.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5.
Most amazing baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
So I told you a couple things I want to get to. One concerns shifts in Major League Baseball. And the other one concerns a name that I saw among trade candidates at the deadline. And for all I know, the story I read could have been from, you know, weeks ago. I don't know. It might have been in spring training. But given the way things have developed in the American League this year, there were actually a couple of names on there. One's more, one's riskier than the other. I'll get to that, though, in just a second, because I know a number of you do want to talk about J.D. Martinez and just the way he is absolutely opened eyes here in the early part of the year. This guy is a force. Shane's in Easton. Shane, what do you got? Shane, you there?
Going, my man.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold. The comment line said, J.D. Martinez is a fraud. So I would like to hear why, and if you get some good dirt, God knows we love to hear it here. John is in the car. John, what do you got?
Hey, Tony, I just wanted to get your take on Hanley and Ramirez and Alex Cora and why Cora insists on having Ramirez bat third all the time. I'd like to see Martinez batting third since he seems like he's the best hitter on the team outside of Mookie Betts, and I'd like to see Betts and Martinez kind of hitting closer together because they tend to get on and get hits a lot.
Okay, so then ultimately you'd have to move Mookie out of the leadoff spot, right?
Well, no, Mookie can be first because it seems like he's pretty comfortable there, but I'd like to see Martinez batting third maybe so that he could hit bat when Mook's on second or gets on base.
Okay, so John, I misunderstood you. I thought you meant that you wanted them side by side, not just close together. I mean, typically that's what teams do in the 3-4, right? It's more often than not, you get one batting in front of the other. The Yankees do a 2-3 with Judge and Stanton, and then Gregorius hits fourth and Sanchez fifth or what have you, but you stack them so that when a pitcher gets there in a key spot with men on base, he can't negotiate his way through and pitch around both guys. I'm actually starting to like the way the Red Sox have it. Betts is comfortable in the leadoff spot. Martinez, to me, is a run producer, big-time run producer, and I don't mind having him behind Hanley. Because I think you're going to need Hanley at some point, too. And I don't think it's a total coincidence that when Martinez was on the cooler side at the beginning of the year, that Hanley was hitting the ball well. And Betts has been pretty good from beginning to end. But at any point, you want two or three guys in there in the heart of your order, anywhere from one through six, firing on all cylinders. And so I think you've had some of that in the early part of the year. And this is a complementary offense. That's how it's supposed to work. You shouldn't be relying on one guy all the time, which... Let's face it, the Red Sox last year didn't even have that one guy. It was a lineup of good hitters, not great ones. And now that you've added Martinez, again, the ripple effect is a lot of these other guys are starting to are hit too.
Yeah, but just real, it does feel at times like he's a black hole there. I understand where the caller's coming from, so I wonder if part of this has to do with almost keeping Hanley Ramirez happy. You know, like if that having him bat third is in part just to make sure he's not a pain in the ass in the clubhouse.
No, it's a good theory, Murray. Yeah, it's a good theory. That you got to appease Hanley because if you hit him sixth, he'll get pissed and then he'll quit on you. So I don't think it's hurt them yet. So this is a team that had led the majors in runs scored going into yesterday, and I'm willing to tolerate it as long as it doesn't ultimately hurt them. So if you got to bite the bullet with Hanley for a little while, I think you bite the bullet because I think in the playoffs they are going to be a better team with Hanley focused and producing. And I think they can afford that, at least right now. Now, they're going to need to win the division at some point, too. And, I don't know what you can do to try to awaken that. But I'm not sure the offense is the real reason you are where you are, either. Ben's in Attleboro. Go, Ben.
Naz, I know Stanton looks like Pedro Serrano from the Major League movies trying to hit off-speed pitches this year. But he's still hitting .478 against the Red Sox. And if you're just talking about how close the race is going to be. If he's hitting that well against the Red Sox, the head-to-head matchups are huge in that. And they got to figure out a way to get around him, and they seem to be the only ones who can't.
Yeah, so Ben, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think Stanton's been a failure. He hasn't. Yeah, the average is now creeping up toward .270. He does have 11 home runs. They overtook the Red Sox last night as the most productive offense in baseball. They scored 10 runs, I think it was. That was against Texas, right? The Yankees offense, Giancarlo Stanton is not a quote-unquote problem, no matter how people here want to paint that. He's not. The Red Sox got their guy, though. Again, in the short term, it looks like Martinez is going to be a huge asset. But Stanton was as much about the long term as anything else. Now, just to jump back to the short term for a minute, and this speaks to the trade deadline, Right now, I still think the Red Sox biggest need is in that bullpen. Now, I'm willing to wait it out and until July and see that, who knows, maybe there's a good starter on the market that you can get for a relatively cheap cost, and you move David Price to the bullpen. Because let's face it, if David Price isn't pitching like a number two starter, what's the point of having him in the rotation if he can be an elite reliever? You might be able to go out on the market, get yourself someone who is basically as good as David Price, might be able to give you a little bit more in the playoffs, and fortify your bullpen by sticking Price in the bullpen. I know it's a radical idea, and I know they're paying the guy a lot of money, but I'm not married to keeping him in the rotation. Okay, so, and I just give you as an example on that, and this is not a target for me per se, at least not yet, but Jay Happ with the Blue Jays. Can one of you guys just quickly let me know what Happ's overall numbers are when you get a second this year? Every time I see Happ pitch against the Red Sox, I think he's half decent. And so, what if you could get Jay Happ, plug him in your rotation, he's not making a lot of dough, I don't think, and then stick Price in the bullpen, and effectively you're better off in both areas. What are Happ's numbers, Mark?
So he is 5-3 with an earned run average of 4.15, 52 innings pitched, 66 strikeouts. What else do you want to know?
No, that's plenty.
Okay.
But 4.15 is basically what Price has given you.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, when I watch Happ pitch, I think he's not bad. So
$13 million for this year, Tony.
Okay, so by the middle of the season, though, that number will be down to 5. Right? You'll have a third of the season left when you acquire him. So you can handle that contract. That's the kind of guy I would keep an eye on if I'm the Red Sox. In regards to the bullpen, I saw two names pop up today. One was Zach Britton with the Orioles. Okay? And he's not my primary target. But Britton is coming back from an Achilles injury. He's closed. He's left-handed. He keeps the ball down. We all know who Britton is. The guy was maybe the best pitcher in the league a couple of years ago. He's been hurt a lot since. So I don't know what it would take to get him, but he might be a guy worth taking a flyer on. That's on the list.
You don't worry about a closer going to the eighth inning like Eric Gagne did when he came here and he couldn't handle it?
I don't. Believe it or not, Jimmy, because I think in the postseason now it's different. And the Red Sox need a second guy who can close anyway. Which brings me to the name that I'm really interested in. Kelvin Herrera with the Royals. Okay, Kelvin Herrera. He's up at the end of the season. Kansas City really sucks. Kansas City blows. This year, Kelvin Herrera has a 1.08 ERA in 18 appearances. 16 and two-thirds innings, 12 hits, one home run, 15 strikeouts, zero walks. Zero. He has not walked a batter. And this guy's pitched in the postseason. He's pitched on a world championship team. He has been able to get out both left-handers, who are batting 174 against him, and right-handers, who are hitting 205 this year. He's a free agent at the end of the year. He has closing experience. One year he had 26 saves, another year he had a dozen or something. But to me, that is the profile of the guy the Red Sox should identify. I have no idea what Kelvin Herrera is making. There are going to be a lot of teams in the market for him because he is going to be a weapon potentially for somebody at the deadline. But that type of guy is the kind of guy the Red Sox should be looking at.
$8 million this year, Tony.
Okay, so again, by the time you get to the end of July, Jimmy, you're talking what? $2.7 million? I mean, a third of that? So they can fit him.
And this guy has been nails in the postseason. 22 appearances, 4 earned runs. That's a 1.26 earned run average.
Okay, and what are the strikeouts and walks in the postseason?
38 strikeouts, 10 walks.
Yeah, I mean, so to me, I look at a guy like that, and I say, that's a difference maker in your bullpen. You put a guy like that with Kimbrel, and my recollection, too, is that there was a time when Herrera pitched in, like, the 6th and 7th. I don't know if they do that with him anymore. Allegedly, he's 28. Although, you know, I always put a little asterisk next to that. He's another one that's, you know, another guy that's from the Dominican Republic. Those Caribbean guys, there's always a 10% tax on their age.
Tony, in the postseason, he's pitched multiple innings. 4 outs, 5 outs, 6 outs.
Well, see, so again, that's my recollection with him, is that he can go a couple of innings. So a guy like that, you could bring in the 7th. He could get you 6 outs, and then you go to Kimbrel. And you eliminate Barnes, Hembry, Kelly, like whatever other clown you want to throw in there. You can pitch those guys in the middle of the game. But Kelvin Herrera, to me, would be a guy the Red Sox should target.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
There are relievers short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Those changes, some of them at least, slightly different motivation. Shifts, for example, I think we went from like 3,000 to 30,000 shifts in a couple of years.
Yeah.
And those shifts alter the game. They change the game because certain types of hitters have less options as to where they can get on base. It encourages two trends that I don't think are positive for the game. More strikeouts and more home runs because you got nowhere to hit a single. You got no choice but to try to hit it out.
So that's the Commissioner of Baseball, Rob Manfred. We had him on the program last year. Again, when you hear those stats on the shifts have gone from 3,000 to 30,000 in a couple of years. Like, that's just, it's asinine to think of how much shifts have increased tenfold. That's like 1,000% increase or something stupid like that. From 3,000 to 30,000 in a short period of time. Okay, now, I used to say shifts should be allowed, and if the hitter's dumb enough to hit the ball over there, so be it. Okay, so be it. Just quickly, Jimmy Stewart and Jim Murray, you guys, pro-shift, anti-shift, you don't care.
I didn't care until recently, until really that the Joe Gallo thing from last week.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second, but go ahead.
Yeah, so now I'm anti.
Okay, he's anti-shift. What about you, Jimmy Stewart?
I hate the shift, but here's a fact. Hitters, adjust. Hit the ball where the fielders aren't. It's not that hard if you apply yourself.
Okay, so the Joey Gallo thing that Murray mentioned, right? Murray, you want to give the particulars? You don't have it up in front of you, do you?
Well, no. So it was Joe Gallo with the Rangers. They were playing the Astros. And just Google it for yourself because there's literally no defense for the Houston Astros from basically second base to the whole left side of the field. Everyone's on the right.
Correct.
It looks completely absurd.
I mean, usually on that shift, one guy will stay over in the shortstop position.
Right.
Or he'll even cheat a little towards second base, but he's on that side.
No,
of it.
Everyone's to the right of second base.
And Murray, they weren't even close.
Right.
There was one guy on the left side of second base, and that was the left fielder. Okay, Altuve was actually playing in right field. And the other thing is the infielders that were over there were deep. So Altuve was in short right field, like a short fielder in softball. Correa was in like short right center field. And Bregman was on the grass to the right side of second base.
And one of the things I hate about this is if Gallo were to lay down a bunt or anyone lays down a bunt to the opposite side and he ends up getting to first base, well, that's against baseball's unwritten rule and he's likely to get plunked the next time up. Like, get out of here. It's gone too far.
So it's easy. Learn to hit for power the other way. Players used to do this all the time. David Ortiz used to do this all the time. Left center field power. Apply yourselves, do it, beat the shift, and hit home runs the other way. And then you know what? The shift goes away magically because the hitter has adjusted to what the elements are.
So, Jimmy, there's a lot of...
Jimmy's a hardliner.
So there's a lot... I used to believe what Jimmy believed. What if I told you that there is data out there to suggest that the shift doesn't actually work?
Let's hear it.
Okay, and when I say it doesn't work, I read a story on Baseball Prospectus today. Apparently, there's a new site out there called baseballsavant.com.
Ugh.
That I clicked on. I know, Jimmy, it is. It is. It's nauseating.
What's your RWC plus?
Okay, so there's a lot of that kind of crap in there, and I got to go fast. But so this Baseball Savant, I clicked on it, and oh my God, I almost passed out. Like it was. I wanted to vomit. I didn't understand any of it, first of all. But this Baseball Prospectus guy put it into context for me by pointing out this. The shifts take away singles, which is what they're supposed to do. But they've led to an increase in walks. So what is happening is, let me read you part of it quickly, okay? Ever since the shift became a thing, there's been a fairly universal reaction among pitchers when asked about it. Pitchers often talk about how the shift made them uncomfortable. It was rarely put into words further than that, perhaps because pitchers didn't want to give away any strategic edge through the media, or perhaps because they didn't know quite how to put it into words. But the data shows that maybe we should have been listening to the pitchers. It seems that hitters have already figured out the best way to beat the shift. Let the pitcher walk you. the walk penalty isn't something that's been publicly discussed when it comes to the shift. However, it turns out that it's effectively swallowing all of the benefits that the shift was supposedly granting. While the full shift is good at preventing singles, batters have just found another way to get to first base. And so what it is when you shift like that, you really only can pitch to half of the plate. You get a pitch on the inside part of the plate. If you pitch away, well, now you're pitching against the defense. And so pitchers are limited in what they can throw. And because they're limited in what they can throw, hitters are more selective. On the ball way inside, they don't swing. There's nothing going to be away, and they're getting more walks. In fact, according to this story, the number of walks added because of the shift outweighs the number of singles taken away.
Good.
While batting average has gone down, on base has gone up.
Huh.
Albeit by a small percentage of points.
But either way, it sounds like the whole thing has been counterproductive.
It is. Yeah. Counterproductive, exactly. Totally. And you know what? This is why they need to outlaw it. Because even if it does benefit the batters, teams won't look at it that way. And it takes another ball out of play. So now, again, you're promoting walks, strikeouts, and home runs. There aren't enough balls in play. It's a problem with the game. Those of you on the line, sit there. It is Trivia Tuesday. And so I remind you that if you want to participate in Trivia Tuesday, the first five callers to the Pride Motor Group contest line, 617-931-0985 right now. You'll have the chance at Trivia Tuesday. If you answer three baseball questions correctly, you'll get a $100 gift card for Seasons 52 Wine Bar and Grill, and you'll be automatically entered for an overnight trip to see Boston play New York in September. It includes game tickets, train tickets, a one-night hotel stay. It's a nice little get, actually. So again, first five callers to the contest line, and we'll play until we have a winner, or five callers maximum. We'll do that next.
With Tony Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's Trivia Tuesday on the Baseball Trivia Reporter. Tuesday. This is where your baseball knowledge can lead to fabulous prizes. And now, here's your host, Tony Mazzarotti.
Okay, here we go. You guys know the drill. You get to answer three in a row. You get a chance to win the trip. You get a $100 gift card to Seasons 52 Bar and Grill. Okay? Wine Bar and Grill at Seasons 52. You'll get that, absolutely. You'll be entered for the drawing to win a trip to Boston, see Boston play in New York in September. That drawing will take place in the month of September. So we're going to get right to the question. You're going to get three in a row right. We do a max of five people. If nobody gets three in a row correct, too bad. We go to next week. And as usual, one of the most entertaining parts of this is listening to the stupidity of you, the caller. Okay, our first contestant is Drew in Grafton. Drew, are you there?
Yeah, I'm ready to be real stupid.
Okay, here we go. The left field wall at Fenway Park is affectionately known as the Green Monster. How tall is the left field wall? 7 feet? 37 feet or 137 feet?
I'll go with 37.
37 feet is correct. Okay, good job. Jimmy, I'm going to ask you to have our audio clue ready here when you have a second. Okay, Drew, here you go. Recently, a Hall of Famer and current baseball analyst said that he thinks J.D. Martinez has been the best hitter in baseball since the start of last season. We're going to play the clip for you. I want you to identify this person. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Frank, when you said that, we decided to grill you and ask you the last 2 years who you think the top five best hitters are. So let's have a little fun.
And it's the last 2 years. It's still debatable. There's some guys on the outside looking in. I could easily, two more Musk could be in my top five. But right now, it's J.D. Martinez, one. Aaron Judge, two. Mike Trout, three. Mm. Jose Altuve, four. And Charlie Blackmon, X Factor, five.
Oh, what was your criteria here?
Just overall hitting. Average. Home runs. Runs scored. These guys are offensive powerhouses. It's an incredible time to watch hitting in baseball. But these guys on that list have done a lot of damage, and J.D. Martinez is number one, has been under the radar. So we're talking about this guy tonight. Talk about J.D. Martinez.
Agreed.
Okay, Drew, who said it?
Frank Thomas.
Frank Thomas is correct. Good job. Okay, third and final question. If you get this, we get a winner, and we can send everyone else home for the night. Excluding David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez. Excluding David Ortiz and Manny Ramirez. Who was the last Red Sox player to hit 40 home runs in a season?
Jesus.
Can't let you go all night. Ted Williams? Incorrect! Ted Williams. Nobody's hit 40 home runs other than those two guys?
Well, his answer actually was Jesus, but he wasn't on the team.
Since 1960? Oh, God. Surprised he didn't guess Babe Ruth. Wow. Okay, here we go. Steven Hudson, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. The Red Sox, you might also call it Crimson, right? A lot of people, Carmine Hose, Crimson, all of that. The Red Sox christened Fenway Park on April 9th, 1912, with an exhibition game against a college team also known as the Crimson. Who?
Alabama.
Nick. incorrect. I couldn't make that clue any easier. Jones, did you know the answer to that? Yep. Okay, don't say it.
Bunch of dorks. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
All right, let's go to...
Roll Tide on that.
Oh, my God, that wasn't even close. Adam in Somerville. Adam, are you there?
Hey, Matt.
Okay. A 30-30 player in baseball is known as a player that hits 30 home runs and steals 30 bases in the same season. Name the only 30-30 player in Red Sox history. It happened in the last six or seven years.
No clue.
Okay, there we go. It's unbelievable. I can't believe all these people are getting these wrong.
Didn't you already give that one?
I don't believe I did.
No.
And if I did, they obviously don't remember it.
It's not that hard.
Okay, let's go to Michael in North Andover. Okay, I can't ask the same question because someone might have looked it up. So here you go, Michael. Legend says that Wally the Green Monster has lived at Fenway Park for ages. In what year did the Red Sox introduce their mascot to the rest of us? 1967, 1997, or 2017?
1967.
Incorrect. Oh, my God. I can't make these any easier. I just can't do it. We got one more contestant. We've gone through four, Jimmy. Is that right?
This is the last one.
All right. Dave is in the car. Dave, are you there?
Yes.
Dave, can I ask how old you are?
I'm 39.
Okay, then you should be able to get this one. In 1975, the Red Sox had a pair of rookies on the team that were both contenders for both the Rookie of the Year award and the MVP. Okay, one of them actually won both. Name one of the two Gold Dust Twins. That's what they were called, the Gold Dust Twins. Name one of the two.
Fred Lynn.
There you go. Very good. Fred Lynn is correct. All right, good job. Okay. Next question. On opening day 2005, after having defeated the Yankees in the American League Championship Series the year before, the Red Sox opened the season against New York. Red Sox fans cheered a Yankees player who had faltered against them the previous October, and he tipped his cap to the crowd good-naturedly. Who was he?
Mariano Rivera.
Very good. There you go. Two for two. You're going to go for the last one. All right, here we go. I'm going to give you a little more difficult question here, and we'll see if you can get it, okay?
Okay.
Two pitchers. Actually, no, I'm going to give you this one instead. The Red Sox have had five closers in their history record 40 or more saves in a season. Five guys have done it. I was going to say name me three of them, but give me just two.
Jeff Riordan and Jonathan Papelbon.
There you go. Very good. Excellent. Okay, I'll tell you what, Dave, we're going to keep you on the line. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll get all your information. You are the winner. I'll give everyone the rest of them if you care. Papelbon did it. Ugueth Urbina, Derek Lowe, Tom Gordon, Jeff Riordan. Those are all your 40 save pitchers. Adam Jones is coming. I don't know how many times I could use the word crimson in a clue and try to lead someone to the answer, and they can't get the right one. It's baffling.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.